The Athenian fleet itself, when it arrived and decisively tipped the balance, took no part in the killing and the proceedings that took place in Corcyra. But they certainly gave the military muscle to the Democrats to do what they wished to do. And Thucydides takes some time, especially in his third book, chapter 82, describing what a civil war like this meant to a Greek city-state. And if you read it, it sounds like a page taken out of the Committee of Public Safety in Robespierre during the Terror in the French Revolution. And I think the best way to understand what's going on is to go to Thucydides' words themselves. And while the passage is a bit lengthy, let me read some selections from that chapter in which he describes what happened at Corcyra, as well as how the horrors of Stasis came to characterize the Greek world. And he starts off with a general statement. "So savage was the progress of this revolution at Corcyra, and it seemed all the more so because it was one of the first which had broken out. Later, of course, practically the whole of the Hellenic world was convulsed, with rival parties in every state, democratic leaders trying to bring in the Athenians and oligarchs trying to bring in the Spartans. In peacetime, there would have been no excuse and no desire for calling them in. But in time of war, when each party could always count upon the alliance which would do no harm to its opponents and at the same time strengthen its own position, it became a natural thing for anyone who wanted a change of government to call in help from the outside." That's a very important point he stresses, that no longer do we vote, we simply go to arms and call in supporters, Sparta or Athens. "In the various cities, these revolutions were the cause of many calamities, as happens and always will happen while human nature is what it is, though there may be different degrees of savagery, and as different circumstances arise, the general rules will admit of some variety. In times of peace and prosperity, cities and individuals alike follow higher standards, because they are not forced into a situation where they have to do what they do not want to do. But war is a stern teacher." Thucydides' key theme here. "In depriving them of the power of easily satisfying their daily wants, it brings most people's minds down to the level of their actual circumstances. So revolutions broke out in city after city, and in places where revolutions occurred late, the knowledge of what had happened previously in other places caused still new extravagances of revolutionary zeal, expressed by the elaboration in the methods of seizing power and by unheard of atrocities in revenge." And Corcyra, in Thucydides' opinion, sets the model of this. And he goes on to give perhaps one of his most brilliant analyses in the entire issue, and that is, how does language change to meet the new circumstances? "To fit in with the change of events, words too had to change their usual meanings. What used to be described as a thoughtless act of aggression was now regarded as the courage one would expect to find in a party member," noting that political trumps religious and kinship ties in these situations, which is a major change for many Greeks. "To think of the future and wait was merely another way of saying one was a coward. Any idea of moderation was just an attempt to disguise one's unmanly character. Ability to understand a question from all sides meant that one was totally unfitted for action. Fanatical enthusiasm was the mark of a real man, and to plot against an enemy behind his back was perfectly legitimate self-defense. Anyone who held violent opinions could always be trusted, and anyone who objected to them became a suspect. To plot successfully was a sign of intelligence, but it was still cleverer to see that a plot was hatching. If one attempted to provide against having to do either, one was disrupting the unity of the party and acting out of fear of the opposition. In short, it was equally praiseworthy to get one's blow in first against someone who was going to do wrong and to denounce someone who had no intention of doing any wrong at all. Family relations were a weaker tie than party membership." And that is a very important point that he's bringing forth, because ties of kinship and marriage are what are all important in the Greek world and in defining citizens in general, since party members were more ready to go to any extreme for any reason whatever. These parties were not formed to enjoy the benefits of established laws, but to acquire power by overthrowing the existing regime, and the members of these parties felt confidence in each other, not because of any fellowship in religious communion, but because they were partners in crime. And even Thucydides, who's thought to be perhaps the historian least concerned about religious conventions in the Greek world, even he brings forth the notion that casting aside religious and moral conventions is the height of folly in and leads to the breakdown of political consensus and effectiveness. And this is a very, very telling remark coming from Thucydides. And I close with a few other points from this passage.